Lotus Bank is just...
And welcome for the very last time to Cat's Whiskers. It's our final programme tonight, unfortunately. But don't be sad, don't be glum. Children's radio is not going away, it's just moving. It's moving to Radio 5. You'll be able to find that on your dial from August the 27th. So make sure you put that date in your diary and listen out for Radio 5. Tonight, we have a final episode of Charlotte's Web. And Amy Ward has sent me a lovely picture from Lymington in Hants of the characters in the story. The Goose is here, Wilbur is here, and Charlotte herself. Thank you very much indeed for that, Amy. That's really nice. It is the last programme. We've been clearing out the cupboards and clearing out the office. And I thought while we were doing it, it would be nice to play some of my favourite reports I made for the programme over the last two series. What better one to start with than the first one I ever made? I went to the Refuge Assurance Building here in Manchester to visit an exhibition called Dinosaurs Alive. Another of the famous dinosaurs that you see modelled in the Triceratops, or the three-horned face. It has the horns of a bull and a horn on its nose, a bit like a rhinoceros, and a very loud noise. Now, this is a dinosaur that I've not come across before. This is the thick-headed lizard, or Pachycephalosaurus. I've been rehearsing that all day. He looks a bit like a Tyrannosaurus Rex, but on the top of his head he's got this huge dome-like thing, which you would imagine would contain a huge brain. But tragically, no, this animal had a brain probably a slightly bigger than your fist. Go on, clench your fist. Now that is the size of the brain of an animal when fully grown that was about 25 feet long. But he has the brain the size of your fist. Not a very bright animal. When I entered the Refuge Assurance Building for the Dinosaurs Alive exhibition, we met Tyrannosaurus Rex, about a third of what his full size would have been. The last thing you see as you walk round is his leg, the size it would have been. I'm 6'1" tall, and I come up to the knee of this animal. I think if I met him on a dark night, I'd be pretty frightened. And if you'd like to meet him, the Dinosaurs Alive exhibition is still touring, and it's currently at the National Museum in Cardiff until the end of it. From animals that are extinct to one that was very much alive and caused an awful lot of problems for our Dr. Pete Rowan on one of his trips to Nepal. As Dr. Pete was out exploring the jungle on the back of an elephant, quite by chance he came across someone or something's unfinished lunch. What happened next was one of the most exciting and dramatic moments ever on Cat's Whiskers. Just listen to this.
The elephant has just smashed a small tree out of the way. I remember it was about to go. Bulldozing its way towards where the other two elephants are to see what they are calling. He must have spotted something.
Tiger?
Yeah.
Did you see it? You did?
Something moving there.
Goodness me, tiger.
Can you see through the tree? Just below us is a deer that the tiger has killed, and it's in front of us in the long grass.
Huh?
There's a spotted deer. Just recently dead.
And the tiger's in that grass.
Just ahead of us.
I'm shaking like a leaf.
It's about 10 metres right in front of us.
Where?
Directly in front of us, but you can't see it now.
There's a small hole there.
Okay.
There,
I can see it.
I can see it looking at me. Stay still. Oh, my God!
Tiger's coming for us.
Get out of there. Not that
one. I have never been so frightened in my life.
I thought that was it. That is the most astounding experience of my life, Doc. Still there?
Where?
Let's get out. Can we get out of here, please?
Still sends a shiver down my spine, that, when I hear it. He's a brave man, Dr. Pete. Thankfully, everyone came out of that a little shaken, but otherwise okay. If that was the most dramatic moment on Cat's Whiskers, our proudest must have been when ex-presenter Adrian Morehouse won the Commonwealth Gold Medal in New Zealand. No sooner had he got out of the swimming pool than we stuck a microphone under his nose and I had a chat with him. Adrian, first of all, very many congratulations. Cat's Whiskers presenter, gold medal winner.
Thank you very much.
You must be pretty excited just about now.
I'm pretty excited, but I'm going to have to contain it a little bit, I think.
Adrian, do you still get nervous at these big occasions, or are you getting a bit? Is it getting a bit old hat now?
I still do get nervous because we only get one big competition like this a year, and when you do it, it's especially the other side of the world, and everyone's watching you, and your parents and your friends want you to do well. It's all pretty nerve-wracking.
What's Auckland like, Adrian? Is it nice?
It's a long way from Manchester, I can tell you that much. It's pretty nice, yeah, but it's also very hot, which makes me feel pretty happy, because in Manchester it's pretty cold at the moment in January.
Is there anything like Cat's Whiskers on New Zealand radio?
There's nothing like it. I'm thinking of staying out here and doing it myself, actually.
Have you met anybody famous while you've been there at these Commonwealth Games so far?
I've met a few famous people, I suppose. I mean, we have a sort of communal dining hall, and all the teams eat in the same place, so you see, like, Sebco walking around and people like that, Peter Elliott. So they're all around here.
All these famous names, and you're so blasé.
Yeah, but listen, I'm talking to a famous name on the radio now, aren't I?
But I suppose you are. But even I, you see, I'm just learning from you, Adrian. One Cat's Whiskers presented. Listen, if I can do the radio programme, does it mean like I could perhaps swim and win a gold medal as well? Can you teach me how to be a swimmer?
Maybe I'll retire in a few years or so, and if you work up to it, we'll get you on.
Speaking of that, how many years practice and training have you put in now?
I've been racing at this level, at like international level, for the last 10 years, and that's twice a day for 4 hours a day.
Have you had enough, mate? You can tell me, because it's your friends now, Cat's Whiskers. Have you had enough?
I've had enough, yeah, I've totally had enough. No, I think I can last another year or two, actually. It gives me a new lease of life doing little things on the side, like Cat's Whiskers and things like that. So, and coming over here where it's really sunny and there's lots of nice people, it sort of makes me want to continue for another year or two.
Long may you continue and long may you win gold medals. Best of luck for Sunday and thanks ever so much for taking time out to talk to us. A new thing that we started this last series of Cat's Whiskers was behind the scenes, and I particularly enjoyed it, especially going behind the scenes at a television programme. I met the presenters of one of my favourites, Blue Peter, Yvette, John and Diane. Yvette, have you had any hairy moments on live television while you've been doing Blue Peter?
Plenty. I think some viewers remember the pancake, which went drastically wrong, and I'm being made to do it again. So I've got my pan at home and I'm practicing like mad. Mm-hmm. Hopefully I'm going to get it right this time.
Well, what went wrong last time?
Well, the pan wasn't very hot, you see. I'm just making excuses. It's my cooking, really. It went dreadfully wrong. No, this time I'm going to practice and see if I can get it right. If I can't get it right, then that's just, I'll never try pancakes again as long as I live.
You're doing a bit of cooking now as well, aren't you?
Hey, cordon bleu chef, me. I enjoy cooking because it's a chance where you get 5 minutes of television, really, to miss everything out and just get on with cooking away and you can have fun. And if things go wrong, it's more explainable, you know, like the pancakes.
You were having loads of fun when you made the carrot cake. I was watching him, he was like, yeah, throw a bit of carrot in.
Do you like the filming, John? I mean, Blue Peter obviously is very famous for the action films that you make.
Filming I love. It's great when you can get out there and, yeah, you meet different people. It's going to be the first and last time you're going to probably be able to do something, whatever it may be, from football to having a look at a bird who's maybe stranded in, you know, conservation. You do so many different films.
Did you all watch Blue Peter when you were little?
Yeah, I did. I watched Valerie Singleton and Leslie Jard and John Merckx. I started from then.
John, did you watch
it? Yeah, between that and Grange Hill. But I never actually made anything, I must confess, but I can always remember my favourite Blue Peter film. And that was when Simon Groom went down to have the theme tune revamped. And for some reason I remember the house, I remember how the theme tune was put together. And for something to stick in your mind, obviously it is an education, because that taught me how the actual records are made or how we would go and do something like that. So hopefully that's what we're doing now.
After our brief trip down memory lane, it's time to come back up to the present day. For our final behind the scenes on Cat's Whiskers, we return to Old Trafford County Cricket Ground. outside the first team dressing room here at Old Trafford County Cricket Ground. With me is Ron, who's the dressing room attendant. What does your job entail, sir?
We come in and first thing in the morning, make sure everything's all cleaned up, and when the players come in, and coffee.
The most important thing of the day,
yes. That's right, yeah.
From what I've seen today in the short time I've spent here so far, you're almost like a father figure to these guys, aren't you? You really run around and look after them,
well,
don't you?
Well, in a way, you've got to be that and look after them, because you're trying to organise their day.
How do you get the red stains out of cricket flannels, Ron? After they've been shining the ball on the legs, how do the red stains come out?
Well,
you're the expert.
Well, we send them away to a dry cleaners. A lot of that.
Illusion shattered.
No. We do have our own washing room as well, but that's more of the towels.
When you play in a first team county game or maybe a 5-day test, what will a player wear?
He's got his cricket boots to start with, and then his flannels, and then his pullover.
Do they wear body armour and stuff?
Well, there is body armour, but it's more often a polystyrene covering. Well, you've got your pads. Don't forget your pads if he's a batter or a wicket keeper. And then you've got arm shields. Also, on your helmets, you've got your face guard.
It's quite
grills.
A dangerous game these days,
yes,
isn't it? In true cricketing fashion.
Right, it's coming down again.
It's starting to rain. Thank you very much indeed for your time. I appreciate it. Well, we couldn't come to a cricket club as prestigious as Lancashire and not talk to one of the gentlemen in the dressing room at the moment. Has been capped many times for England as a bowler and still plays for the Lancashire first team. Paul Allett. How did your cricketing career start? Were you a schoolboy champion or anything like that?
Well, I suppose in certain terms I was, yeah. I played for local grammar school, Altrincham Grammar School, when I was obviously 12. And then I played for Cheshire Schoolboys from the time I was 14 right up to the time I was 18 till I left.
Fairly illustrious track record you've got.
I suppose it was, but there's a huge gap between playing schoolboy cricket and then entering the professional ranks. You think at the time that you know everything there is to know about cricket. You very soon come down to earth when you get out onto the professional circuit, because the games are just totally different.
It's jolly hard work, isn't it, professional cricket? I mean, it's not just wandering out of, you know, for the occasional county game or whatever, and then wandering back in again. What's a typical day for you, Paul?
Well, there's a popular misconception that county cricket is just play on Saturdays and Sundays. Well, that's not true. We've just finished a spell of 21 days out of 23. A typical day, supposing we're playing at home at Old Trafford, we get into the ground at 9:30. Ron, our illustrious dressing room attendant, has
Father figure, I described him as earlier.
He's got the coffee and the tea on in the dressing room with a big tray of biscuits, and so we stick into that first of all. We're all out on the field by 9:45. Takes me 20 minutes to get changed, because I have to tape my toes up with elastoplast and little things like that, all the unseen things that people don't realise about, before we start at 11 o'clock. And obviously if we're fielding, we're bowling from 11 till 1:15, come back in for lunch, and then we obviously go out and have another 2.5 hour session after lunch, in for tea, sandwiches, pies and all sorts. I mean, we can actually eat far too much during the cricket, so you have to discipline yourself.
What has been the moment that you will most look back on so far in your career and think, yes, I was really pleased with my performance there?
That accolade in any professional sportsman's career is representing his country, and I just happened to do that here in 1981 against Australia, which again against the old enemy on your home ground, and I managed to score 52 runs as well, which I wasn't really picked to do, but we managed to do that. We won the test match. I got 4 wickets in the game. By winning the test match, we won the Ashes. So I think to do all that on your first game for your country is a marvellous thing, a magnificent memory.
Well, it's Allott now facing up Baldwin, who comes in. And he cuts that one, and a very good stroke indeed, and that's gone through. And it's going to be stopped just short of the rope. It's going to be fielding by him, but it's gone over the rope. So that's 4, and a perfectly good spare cut for 4 off a short ball outside the off stump.
Well done, Paul. I remember watching that on television. Fine performance. Thanks to everybody at Old Trafford, and best wishes to Paul Allett in his testimonial season. If you would like to interview a sports celebrity or personality of your choice, Radio 5 will give you the chance to do that. Just drop them a line with your name, age, address and phone number if you have one, and tell them who you would like to interview. The address to write to will come up at the end of the programme. Now, as this is the last Cat's Whiskers and Radio 5 is just around the corner, this seems like a good word for the final birthday list. F-I-V-E.
Four, three, two, one.
celebrating a birthday this week are John Raffaelli, Karen Davidson, Gabriel McKerney, James Patience, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Rory Clisby, Daniel Beachy, Toby Bristow, Rian Matthews, Ruth Edwards, Andrew Harbach, Katie Shorter, Carol Jackson, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Andrew Bourne, Emily Hato and Julia Strong, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Rachel James, Teresa O'Brien, Alexandra Matz, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Andrew Wally, Caroline Spendel of Mason, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Philip Temple and Christopher Donovan, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Uh-huh, it was the man, Fred. Toby Fraser-Gorsden, Eliane Byrne, Kelly Holt, Rose Boyle, Tamsin G, Anoop Patel, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Patrick Hole, Laura Haig and Nicholas Burgin, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Vicky Eaton, Nicholas Wilson, Anna McNally, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Laura Brenton, Gareth Williams, Adam Glass, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Sarah Free, Helen, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Uh-huh, it was the man, Fred. Helen Osler, Philip Soley, Mary Wise, and Ricky. Birthday to all of you from all of us on Cat's Whiskers. 'Cause it's the final programme this evening, we've reprogrammed the turnout names from the birthday list, not membership numbers. 5 t-shirts to give away tonight, so listen very carefully for your... The winners are Emily, Christopher, Eliane, Anoop, and Garrett. Congratulations to the 5 of you, Emily Hato, Christopher Donovan, Eliane Byrne, Anoop Patel and Gareth Williams. There'll be a Cat's Whiskers t-shirt in the post to you very soon. More winners now as we come to the results of our environment competition. If you remember, we asked you, what are CFCs and what are they doing to our environment? Well, CFCs are chlorofluorocarbons, and the damage they're doing to our environment is damage to the ozone layer, which is letting through harmful rays from the sun. Well done if you got it right. We had hundreds of entries and most of them were right, which is good news, because we've got to look after our environment. But we picked 5 out of the hat, and the 5 mini greenhouses with instructions on how to grow things in your own bedroom are going to Jennifer Bolton, to Daniel Holt, to Rebecca Clark, to David Ricks, and to Tom Forster and his little brother Paul. Congratulations, the mini greenhouses will soon be on the way to you. Now, on the final Cat's Whiskers, the final episode of Charlotte's Web.
Wilbur lay resting after the excitement and strain of the ceremony.
Charlotte, said Wilbur, why are you so quiet? Do you feel all right?
A little tired, perhaps, but I feel peaceful. You will live secure and safe, Wilbur. Nothing can harm you now.
Charlotte, said Wilbur, we're going home today. Aren't you anxious to get home?
I won't be going back to the barn, said Charlotte in a low voice.
Not back, cried Wilbur. Charlotte, what are you talking about?
I'm done for, she replied. In a day or two, I'll be dead. I haven't even strength enough to climb down into the crate. Hearing this, Wilbur threw himself down in an agony of pain and sorrow.
Charlotte, he moaned. Charlotte, my true friend.
Be quiet, Wilbur, said the spider. Don't make a scene. Suddenly, Wilbur thought of the egg sack. If Charlotte herself was unable to go home, at least he must take her children along. In the distance, he saw the arables and the Zuckermans approaching. He knew he would have to act quickly.
Where's Templeton?
He demanded. In that corner, under the straw, said Charlotte. Wilbur rushed over, pushed his snout under the rat, and tossed him into the air.
Templeton! Screamed Wilbur. Pay attention!
The rat, surprised out of a sound sleep, looked first dazed, then disgusted.
What kind of monkey shine is this? He growled.
Listen to me, cried Wilbur. Charlotte is very ill and cannot accompany us home. Therefore, it's absolutely necessary that I take her egg sack with me. You're the only one that can get... There's not a second to be lost. The people are coming. Please, 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 Templeton, climb up and get the egg sack.
The rat yawned.
So, he said, it's old Templeton to the rescue again, is it?
Oh, hurry up, Templeton, said Wilbur.
So, it's hurry up Templeton, is it?
Said the rat, imitating Wilbur's voice.
And what thanks do I ever get for my services, I would like to know?
Templeton lay back in the straw. Lazily, he placed his forepaws behind his head in an attitude of complete relaxation. Get up! Screamed Wilbur. Templeton lay still.
Has it ever occurred to you that I'm sick of running errands and doing favors? He said.
Wilbur was desperate. He remembered Templeton's fondness for food. Templeton, he said, get Charlotte's egg sack for me, and from now on, we eat first from the trough. The rat sat up.
You mean that?
He said. I promise.
All right, it's a deal, said Templeton.
He climbed the wall and crept along till he reached the egg sack. Then he bared his long teeth and began snipping the threads that had fastened the sack to the ceiling. He cut the sack loose and carried it down to Wilbur. Thank you, Templeton, said Wilbur. I will never forget this as long as I live.
Neither will I, said the rat, picking his teeth. That stuff's worse than candy floss.
Wilbur carefully took the egg sack in his mouth and held it on top of his tongue. As he was being shoved into the crate, he looked up at Charlotte and winked. She knew he was saying goodbye in the only way he could, and she knew her children were safe. Goodbye, she whispered. Then all her strength and waved one of her front legs at him. She never moved again. Next day, as the big wheel was being dismantled, Charlotte died. And so, Wilbur came back to his beloved manure pile in the barn. There is no place like home, thought Wilbur, as he placed Charlotte's 514 unborn children carefully in a safe corner. He no longer worried about being killed, for he knew that Mr. Zuckerman would keep him as long as he lived. The autumn days grew short. Trees lost their leaves. One evening, just before Christmas, the first snow began falling. Cold settled on the world. The pasture was bleak and frozen. Templeton moved indoors. His home under the trough was too chilly. But he continued to visit Wilbur 3 times a day, exactly at meal times, and Wilbur kept his promise and let the rat eat first. Wilbur watched over Charlotte's egg sack. Nothing in life was so important as this small, round object. Patiently, he awaited the end of winter. The snows melted. The streams and ditches bubbled and chattered with rushing water. A warm wind blew, and the last remaining strands of Charlotte's old web floated away and vanished. One fine sunny morning, after breakfast, Wilbur stood watching his precious sack. As he stood there, he noticed something moved closer and stared. A tiny spider crawled from the sack. It was no bigger than a grain of sand, and it looked just like... 2 more spiders crawled out and climbed round and round on the sack. Then there were 3 more little spiders, then 8, then 10. Wilbur trembled with joy. Charlotte's children were here at last. Hello there, he said. I'm an old friend of your mother's. I'm glad to see you. The little spiders waved their forelegs at him. Wilbur could see by the way they acted that they were glad to see him. For several days, they crawled here and there, exploring their new world. Then one morning, A warm draft of rising air blew softly through the barn. One of the baby spiders climbed to the top of the fence. It stood on its head, spinnerets in the air, and let loose a cloud of fine silk. The silk formed a balloon. As Wilbur watched, the spider let go of the fence and rose into the air. Another baby spider crawled to the top of the fence, made a balloon, and sailed away. Then another. Wilbur was frantic. Charlotte's babies were disappearing at a great rate. At last, one little spider took time enough to stop and talk to Wilbur.
This is our moment of setting forth. We are going out into the world to make webs for ourselves.
But where? Asked Wilbur.
Wherever the wind takes us, near, far, east, west.
You can't all go, said Wilbur. I would be left alone, with no friends. The air was now full of balloonists, circling, drifting away through the door. Cries of,
goodbye, goodbye, goodbye,
came weakly to Wilbur's ears. He couldn't bear to watch any more. He sank to the ground, closed his eyes, and cried himself to sleep. When he awoke, it was late afternoon. He looked into the air, but all the balloonists were gone. He walked drearily to the doorway where Charlotte's web used to be. He was standing there, thinking of her, when he heard a small voice.
Salutations,
it said.
I'm up here.
So am I, said another tiny voice.
So am I,
said a third voice.
Three of us are staying. We like this place, and we like you.
Wilbur looked up. At the top of the doorway, three small webs were being constructed. On each web, working busily, Charlotte's daughters. Wilbur's heart brimmed with happiness. From that time onwards, Wilbur was never without friends. Fern was growing up and did not come regularly to the barn anymore. But each spring, new moved out. Most sailed away on their balloons, but always two or three stayed and set up housekeeping in the doorway. Wilbur never forgot Charlotte. He loved her children and grandchildren dearly, but she was in a class by herself. It's not often that someone comes along who's a true friend and a good writer. Charlotte was both.
And if you've enjoyed Charlotte's Web, or any of the stories we've had over the last 4 years of Cat's Whiskers, don't forget, plenty more to come on Radio 5, which begins on August the 27th. And speaking of Radio 5, I've got to clear out the studio now, pack it all into the BBC van waiting outside the door, and take it all down to London. Clear out the books, we've got the records here, all the tapes, and the Pearlitzer, which is a bit large. I might have to get a bit of help with that. Yeah, time to take Cat's Whiskers off into the sunset. Thank you for being there on Sunday nights. Without you, there wouldn't be a programme. Thank you for your letters. Thank you for your support. Thank you, all the club members. It really has been a lot of fun. I've really enjoyed it. I hope you've been enjoying it. I've been very privileged to be part of Cat's Whiskers. Enjoy Radio 5. Bye-bye.
Cat's Whiskers was presented by Andy Crane and produced in Manchester by Mary Callum Carrion. Next week at 7 o'clock, Julie Mayer will be...